Hey friends, welcome to this episode of the podcast. I am really psyched about this episode because I've got with me my mentor, Dave Kuntz. I'm not sure about you, but for me as a developing leader, I begin to ask so many questions that were really specific, really embarrassing, and frankly, ones that I didn't know what to do with. These were my questions. What do I really contribute? What does my own voice sound like? Not theirs, not hers, but what does mine? And how do I use my voice to do the work that God's called me to do? These are the kinds of questions we're going to be answering. I cannot wait. Dave's going to bring some good stuff. So let's do this. You're listening to the Leader Lab podcast, a podcast that inspires women to step up and step out in leadership to fulfill their God-given callings. My name is Andy Bruce, and I'm so passionate about helping women develop their character and understand their callings that I went out and got a doctorate in leadership. Now I'm investing in and partnering with women leaders who just love Jesus and who are raising their hand saying, God, if you're looking for someone to use, I'm right here. So let's talk about how. How do we step into what that looks like? Hey, so I've got Melissa and Dave with me. Hey, friends.
Hey. Hello.
So here's my question for you guys. Melissa, our friends know you. They don't really, some of them know Dave. So Dave, if you had three words to describe yourself, what would those words be?
Three words to describe myself.
And then we're going to do three words.
I was going to say.
Exactly. Nerd a little bit.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
You're an engineer, correct?
Exactly. Like, I'm an engineer, yeah. Yes. So, yeah, kind of a nerdy guy. I'm an introvert, but an adventurer.
Okay, nice. So you're an introvert, but you're often surrounded by people. How does that go for you?
Draining.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, here's my next question. How do you refuel?
I refuel, I like projects. I like solving problems.
By yourself?
Yeah, pretty much for the most part. My wife, she went down to Texas because my first granddaughter was born down there. And so she was gone for a month. This was about April last year. And she's like, well, who are you going to get together with like when I'm gone?
That's what Jared says too.
And I'm like, nobody. Right. Like I have no, you know, and I did have a couple of things, but even that fell through and I was fine. I did not have any problem with that. Exactly. Actually, I took a motorcycle ride the early part of May just by myself all the way up through these back roads and forest roads all the way up to the border of New York. And it was like 5 days, 4 days of just being by myself and seeing the beauty of God's creation, and I camped and I've been riding for many, many years, and that was probably the best motorcycle ride I've ever taken.
That's cool.
So that would be a refueling. Learning new things, that refuels me, things like that. Yeah.
Okay, so you said nerd, introvert, adventurer.
Yes.
Give us just a snapshot of life for you. Like, who are you? What has God brought you through?
I'm blessed. When I look back at my life, I look at the family I came from, I look at the wife God gave me, my kids. I'm a very blessed guy. Mm-hmm. I just have a whole lot. I mean, just the community of faith he allowed me to walk with at Blue Ridge and the people I got to see, they inspired me. He let me travel around the world, just being part of what he's doing. And I'm just a really blessed guy. If you want to know that's who I am.
That's awesome. So these days you've transitioned. Want to talk about that for a moment?
Yeah. So, it's a little scary, but that's that adventure side. I have for 35 years, I've worked for people in basically engineering roles, kind of the nonprofit world, the church. I've been in, the support sides of companies, different things like that. And I just felt it was that in January, I was going to step out and see if I could do for other companies what I give away what I've seen as far as some healthy stuff and some leadership lessons. I want to see, I've always wanted to see transformation in other people and in myself. And so transformational leadership is kind of what excites me, I guess I would say. And so not just, hey, inspirational, but transformational, meaning to actually see change. And so to get to be a part of that, I was in Richmond a few weeks ago, and there was a company that wanted to just, they wanted to be more servant leaders. And I got to sit around with their basically their arborist. So they're tree arborists. They climb trees and trim them up. And just to come along beside to help them and hear their excitement about, wow, that's what we want. I was in Puerto Rico last week and with the team, and they just wanted to be, we talked about liberation, being a liberating leader, and they were like, wow, that's what I want to be. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just excited to be a part of that. I mean, I haven't figured out by any stretch, but to come along, it feels like an honor to come along beside people mm-hmm. that want to do that journey yeah. and want to see what they're capable of.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
and want to experience that. I'm motivated most by impact mm-hmm. than anything else. Mm-hmm. And so that feels, again, pretty blessed to be yeah. able to be part of that.
So we're going to be talking about something called the five voices that you've been teaching, Dave. But before we jump into that, I remember really early on when I was just starting to open the Bible and teach women regularly. Before that, it had been a one-off here, a one-off there, or I was just really young and kind of making up even theology a little bit, you know. But when I started doing that, I think because there are so few female role models of leaders and Bible teachers, and again, this is 15 years ago, I saw what they did, and I basically thought my job was to jump on their bandwagon and replicate what I saw them doing, replicate their voices. So I know that didn't go well for me. It felt like wearing somebody else's shoes. And I'm curious to see, did you guys have this journey, since we're talking about voices, where you tried to, or you misunderstood the voice that God actually gave you? Or you were growing into it?
Melissa?
So I don't think Andy, we're wired so different. I don't think I had that experience. I don't think I had that experience.
When you were learning to develop your voice, anything that stands out to you?
Well, I didn't know what I was doing. And when you mean developing my voice, do you mean like my teaching voice?
Yeah, or even just your leadership voice.
You know, I struggled way more with my leadership voice, because I think that's a quieter voice that I have than a teaching voice. And so that, I would say, I did, now that I'm thinking in that realm, because it wasn't as natural, I did look to other people the way that they led or influenced, and thought that that's the way that I have to lead or influence.
Yeah, I've really noticed you in the last 4 years, would you say, undoing that
yeah.
and learning to have
just
confidence.
Be myself.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
yeah, which often means saying no or yeah. removing what the assumed role is to be a different role.
Yeah,
it's been interesting. What about you, Dave?
Yeah, I think early on, especially when I stepped into my role at Blue Ridge, which is, like I say, the pastoral role that I never really saw myself or wanted to be around. And that was different, because I actually experienced, you know, I didn't have a lot of models to choose from. But as I did, I found my voice by finding what resonates. Hmm. You know, it's interesting. Have you ever been in Judson's office at mm-hmm. Blue Ridge? So he's got all these stringed instruments sitting around. I mean, they're hanging from the walls. So there's different guitars and different things like that. But it's interesting, when you talk, different ones of them vibrate. Like, they resonate with your voice.
Wow.
Yeah, if you go in there, there's like a hmm. I mean, it's really interesting, because it's a natural frequency of your voice that is resonating with these, I guess, the acoustic signatures or acoustic resonance of the device or the instrument. And I think that's where I started to learn my voice. I started to see which ones were resonating with me, and that helped me be able to figure out what my voice helped me get more clarification about where my voice was.
Yeah. So Dave Sedersoff, five voices. What is this, and what do we need to know before we get into each of the five?
Yeah. So if you look at most people, as far as leadership, they look at a lot of hard skills: ability to communicate, your ability to problem solve, your ability to organize, or whatever. These skills, these hard skills, your IQ abilities. And if you read much about that, and this, we really learned a lot more about this back in the 90s. Daniel Goleman wrote a book called About Emotional Intelligence. And the idea is that for most leaders, their effectiveness is shaped. In fact, Harvard did a study that 56% of a leader's effectiveness is not IQ, but EQ, their ability to connect with people, to empathize, to be able to read a room, be able to navigate conflict. But it's the EQ side. Mm-hmm. And so what helps, though, what moves that is you can grow in empathy and grow in active listening skills and all of those. But really the biggest factor is knowing yourself, being aware of self-awareness. And we've all met people in our lives that weren't that self-aware. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was us, you know, that weren't that self-aware.
That's tricky because you don't know when you're not self-aware.
You don't know what you don't know.
Because
exactly.
Everybody thinks everybody else is not self-aware, but they assume that they are self-aware.
Here's what it is. Dysfunction never recognizes dysfunction. It's not aware of it.
Yeah.
You don't realize it because you don't know exactly what you said. You know, there's a study that's like over 80% of us consider ourselves above average drivers. Uh-huh. Like, just let that sink in a little bit. Like, okay. Well, right. There's obviously some blindness there, and not intentional. It's just so we've all taken tests, like personality tests, to help us understand. I mean, Myers-Briggs, DISC, Strengths Finders, lots of different Enneagrams, lots of things, and they're interesting and they do help you kind of know. But I have never really found a lot of practical uses. Remember, I'm a nerd. I'm an engineer first, and that's kind of where my mind works. And so the practicality of, okay, that's nice, that's interesting, but what can you do with it?
Yeah.
Kind of like,
yeah.
And so what, as I was kind of in my last few years of really in roles of leadership development and of developing people, I found this tool called the Five Voices, and it was the most effective tool I've found to date that helped me to understand myself and helped me to interact with other people more effectively. And so as I started to kind of myself become more self-aware, but take this to teams, I just saw more traction. I saw more teams utilizing this. I saw teams get healthier. I saw teams really start to use this in a way that was, and that's not to talk negatively about other personality, because I think they all have their value. It's just, this is the one that I've been able really to get so much more traction out of. Mm-hmm. I was in Puerto Rico last week with a team, and I watched a team go from, as you said, dysfunctional, because they're not intentionally dysfunctional, but they didn't realize it. They just knew it wasn't working as well, and they were a little frustrated, but they kind of accepted it. To as they took this journey, there was like huge light bulbs. I had people telling me, I feel seen, and I feel like I understand myself, and I feel, one guy said, I love myself more now. I mean, it's just very much accepting, wow, that's how I'm made. Oh, I was just frustrated before. And so it's just really, that's kind of what, it's not magical, it's, you know, but it helps you, gives you self-language, and it's pretty sticky to help you understand yourself, help you understand how to interface and function well with others, and maybe understand why they frustrate you. And not in a way that, well, they're wrong or I'm right, but, oh, I get it now why we weren't. And now I need that. I see the value of you. In fact, I saw a team just really come together. And when they started to realize and value the other voices, it was so healing for them. And they're a good team overall. I mean, a lot of God stuff happening between them, but it was really cool to see that.
Okay, Dave, so five voices. Let's get in it.
What do you want to know?
Well, why? I feel like you just described why we need five voices.
Okay.
To really understand who we are, to become more self-aware, higher EQ. What I remember hearing you say, there's not one primary voice.
So what's interesting is, and frustrating for me, I don't know if you've ever felt that, like when you take those personality tests, you're like, yeah, maybe. Like I they give me a question, do you do this? And I'm like, some of the time.
Depends.
You know, it depends, exactly.
Right.
And I felt like they kind of almost box you in.
Yeah.
And what I loved about the five voices is saying that you have all five of these voices in you. Mm-hmm. It's just some are more natural and some are more accessible and some are more kind of the way that other people kind of experience you. So you're when I say you're five voices, it's your leadership voice. And your leadership voice doesn't mean the voice, you know, that when your kids like are acting out and you got to get that voice and volume and get your, did you hear me? Like, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking really about kind of the way you approach problems and where your focus is as a leader. And that's kind of what we're talking about. So the five voices, and I'll work from basically the quietest ones to the loudest ones. The first voice, the quietest voice, is the nurturers.
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
About quietest voice.
Okay.
What makes it quiet, and what do you mean by that?
When I say the quietest voice, I mean the one that is most often not heard or the hardest to hear. And when I say the hardest to hear, it's because it's the softest. You know when the people speak really soft? When my dad's hearing was going, there's certain voices, high-pitched voices and soft voices that he couldn't hear.
Yeah.
Like when his grandchildren would speak. Right?
But you're not talking physical volume.
I'm not talking physical volume.
I'm talking about
in a group, in a leadership team, in a place. So
it's my husband. He's not going to be assertive. He's not going to raise his hand. He's not going to...
The quietest.
Yeah.
They're the quietest in the voice.
He's faithful.
When they're sitting at a meeting, often they're the ones that don't speak up. They're the ones that aren't assertive. They're not pushy voices.
So pushy, that's the...
They're quietest because they're really... They're very people focused. They use the term nurturer because when you think of a nurturer, they think of somebody that's caring, somebody that cares about people. They're very focused on harmony. They're focused on caring for one another. They always recognize like the other people in the room. They see them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they love to celebrate. They're just really, they're people. People love to be around. They love to be team players. They don't want to be out front, but they want to help.
They're faithful.
Incredibly faithful.
They're going to do the stuff nobody else wants to do.
Exactly. But often they struggle with sometimes feeling as that they should be leading because they figure other people were smarter. They got better ideas or whatever. And so they're fine. They're the ones that don't say anything in the meeting, but everybody comes to them because they know that they'll listen to them and they know that they'll be heard. And they, like I said, they love celebrating. They remember birthdays. They remember like, oh, that's a new haircut you got or whatever. Like I don't even notice that, you know, but they always, they see people. They don't just see the issue and they're focused on the people. And they're focused on how decisions affect people. And like, if they see somebody in a meeting and they know something's off, they'll come to you and go, hey, Dave, what's up? Are you okay? You know, because they just are constantly, their radar is tuned to others, if that makes sense. Yeah,
it does.
How many are there?
Actually the largest group, and 43% of people, when they go through this thing, they identify as nurturers.
Wow.
That's the largest.
That's crazy. And
probably over half of them are women.
Oh,
a little over, yeah. So women, a lot. Well, think of nurturers. You think of the people, the caregivers. And when people go and they're hurt, who do they go to? They go to a nurturer. They don't go to other people. Mm-hmm. You want to be around somebody that cares. And that's, care is their number one thing.
So interesting that 43%, but around this table, Dave is not a nurturer. Melissa is not a nurturer. I don't care. Yeah. I'm like, find a therapist. I don't know. We'll see you when you feel great and have some energy and something to provide. But
my wife is a classic nurturer.
Yes.
She cares about people. She celebrates people. She doesn't realize how, you know, she's sometimes always questioning her, like, should she be in that leadership role? But she is a classic nurturer.
Yeah,
you know what she does? She's in Bible Lab. And you know what she does for us? I've told her this several times. The nurturer, is it a present voice?
Yes.
She keeps us so present in a very nurturing way. Like when Andy and I will go on this, like, oh, I don't know why we're doing this. And, oh, we were like, yeah, we're not very practical. And Deb's like, wait, stop.
Yeah.
What you're doing right here, what I'm holding in my hands right here is practical application. I'm like, oh, thanks, Deb.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like she keeps us present.
She does.
She doesn't let the little things slide when it comes to encouraging us or others.
No. And she's very focused on experiences.
Yes.
And that everyone feels welcome. Like all of that stuff.
Yeah. Exactly. Early on, a girl who was brand new was crying. It is Deb's hand just on her back, just gentle. I don't even know that girl was highly aware of it, but
she was. She said it felt like a mother.
A mom. That's right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So nurturers, praise the Lord.
Exactly. Yes. So that's what it's about. The next voice, and this one's kind of interesting because you wouldn't think it was quieter, and it's not quieter in volume. It's just when you think harder to hear. Think of quieter as harder to hear. It's creatives. And a lot of time I use that word creative, we're thinking, oh, you mean like artistic? You think about like painting or creative? No, and what I mean by creative is I'm thinking outside of the box thinking.
Uh-huh.
And that's really what we're talking about. Creatives see farther down the road than the rest of us. They're thinking farther in the future than the rest of us. And they're always kind of asking the, why couldn't we? What if? Their mind, when they see a system, when they see something, they're idealists at heart, so they want it to be all it can be. Mm-hmm. And so when it's not, it really bothers them. And they, but what they see in their head is sometimes hard for us to understand because it's not something we imagine. It's not, it's a new, it's different. And so when they start talking, sometimes it's hard to totally grasp how this is different. Mm-hmm. What that really looks like, and they're not really sure, but they know it can be. Mm-hmm. Even as they talk, sometimes it's just confusing to listen to them, especially if they start getting past where they know so far. Then it's really confusing what they're talking about, and they go, I have a son that, you know, when he starts to go off rails, I'm like, I have no idea what he's talking about now. But creatives are the ones who innovate. They're the ones that usher in the future. They're idealist in almost all areas of their lives. They often see that 90% that was accomplished, all they can see is the 10% that it didn't make.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes they'll frustrate teams because they feel like they suck the joy out of them, like it's never there. But it's not that they don't want it. They're just idealist at heart. You love them because they move us to the new places. They keep pushing us. When they see a discontinence, a gap between how an organization or a team is functioning with what they say, it really bothers them because, like I said, idealist is where their mind works. So, go ahead.
You are creative.
Yeah, that's my top voice, is the creative voice. And would you say, I'm back to the still figuring out the soft versus a loud voice. Would you also say that it's not as an effective voice? Meaning like that it doesn't move the needle. Like nurture is not going to move the needle. Creative have a harder time moving the needle.
They do, because creatives oftentimes, like I say, they're so dealing with the ideal that the practical of all that, how to apply that, how to build that, you know, because they're out there in front of us. And so when they talk, if a team doesn't take the time to dig at them, then they don't feel heard. And what happens with the creative, when the creative doesn't feel heard,
shut down.
They shut, well, actually they shut down and go back and solve it themselves. They actually they become more introverted and more critical.
Yeah.
And, but they're like, fine, if you don't get, like, I know it can be, and they
I'm
just go and
want,
exactly, that's exactly what they do. But for a team, they withdraw from a team.
Yeah.
That's what a creative does. But a good team is pulling that out. Is kind of staying engaged with them long enough to help them understand. Sometimes a creative will get frustrated because they'll hear an idea. Somebody says, like, I don't know, 3 weeks after they brought it up, and they're like, everybody's like, oh, that sounds great. And they're like, I've been saying that the whole time, you know?
Yes, exactly.
But it's, well, okay, we just didn't understand you, right? Mm-hmm. That another voice will sometimes do. But creatives are they're very future focused. Uh-huh. They're focused on what can be, and they're very normally logic and rationale and all that stuff, but they're building the future. They're just farther down the road than the rest of us.
So it's interesting that there is a lot of logic in this creative.
Oh, very much so.
Creatives, I mean, I see that in you, and I sort of just, because creatives can have that artistic-y, like the perception, and I know that this isn't that, but it's interesting that logic and creativity, that is, it's got to be a frustrating mix.
It is. I feel most frustrated by, you know, for instance, Bible App, we're doing this, is the new creative project. And when I try to describe it, people don't understand it.
Even the
people
blank
who are
look in
it
their face
don't understand
exactly.
it.
Not the way you do.
Not the way I do. Exactly.
That's what I'm saying. The way it looks in your head is so much clearer, but sometimes getting it out.
And it frustrates her. It frustrates the people around me. It frustrates Andy as my ministry partner, and it frustrates me.
Because we are experiencing the 90%. Right. Of fruit, of benefit.
And all I can see is the 10.
And it is unsatisfactory.
Exactly.
And I'm like, why isn't this good enough? Like, it feels like her 10% longing invalidates the 90%
yes.
to me.
Yes, and that's what creatives have to watch against. That's where we talk about being...
You've gotten so much better.
We talk about being intentional or accidental. And when they're left to their accidental, that's where
that's
it
right.
goes.
Where I'm going to drift, I'm going to drift to the 10.
Right,
oh,
exactly.
I see. Yeah, that
so
makes
it's,
sense.
It's realizing their intentionality has to be to celebrate the 90
and
be intentional.
Say, how can we get to that?
Exactly. That's just...
On my end, working in a team with you, Melissa, a creative, it feels often like my job is pulling the new questions out and or asking or trying to help you understand why, a way to describe what is in your mind, but we can't see and understand. And I think it's taken us a long time to realize that, because she would be like, never mind. And kind of probably just not bring it up again, because she knows she couldn't re-describe it.
It can get frustrating on both sides of the equation.
Yeah.
Both sides. Yeah. But yeah, again, a team needs innovators to create the new. They will stagnate if they do not allow creatives both the physical space and the intellectual space to both do it and actually fail. It's got to be okay to try something new, to keep trying something new, to keep challenging us, to keep thinking outside the box.
Anything else to add, Little Miss Creative?
I don't think so.
Do you enjoy being a creative?
It's where I, you know, pioneer would be, and I know Dave will talk about this, my next one, and how I figured out the difference between my first voice and my second voice was creative is where I live without trying.
Right. Okay. That's
it's just where my brain is going to go.
Your first voice, and we're going to talk about the voice order a little bit, but your first voice is the one you're unconsciously competent in.
Yeah.
It's your go-to. It's like if I asked you to sign your name, it's the pen you would pick up with the hand. That's what it would.
So, Dave, frequency for creatives?
Frequency of
percentage,
how many?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they're about 9%. They're the second smallest voice.
Wow. Oh, interesting.
So there are, think about it this way. There are almost five times as many nurturers as there are creatives.
Wow.
Wow. That's,
yeah.
That is interesting to put yeah. that way. Okay. So we've got the nurturers who are going to be steady eddies who care for people. Then we've got creatives who are going to push the needle forward as best as they are probably given the freedom to do.
Right.
What's next?
So the next voice is guardians. And if you think of, they're another notch up in volume. You'll almost always hear a guardian, where creatives, they can sometimes, like I say, if you're not intentional, they frustrate you, you frustrate them, so they kind of, they'll go off. But a guardian is somebody, when you think of guardian, think about guarding the present. They're just really good at bringing organization. They're great at systems. Mm-hmm. They're very logic driven individuals. They are people who ask the tough questions. They're not so excited about the wow as the how. Mm-hmm. Like if you bring an idea to a guardian, the first thing is, okay, how are we going to do that? And their mind immediately starts thinking the steps that's going to take to get mm-hmm. there. Right?
It feels like skepticism, though.
It
to
does.
Me,
to a creative,
yeah.
to a creative
like
who
skepticism.
Doesn't have it all figured out.
Yeah,
yeah, that feels like you're boxing me in a
yes.
little bit.
The other thing is, if I'm brainstorming as a dreamer, as a creative, wanting to, I don't ever want to do what we just did. Why
right.
would we want to do that again? I want to, even if it's just slightly different. That's what I want to do. But it feels like to brainstorm with a guardian, they hear the first idea and are like, great, that's what we're doing. And it's, the brainstorm doesn't help them.
Right. They don't live in the world of, you know, what can be. They live in the world of what is, mm-hmm. right? And they are so good at protecting us from making reckless decision. They do the due diligence. They are repeatable. If you want repeatable results,
yes.
you need
mm-hmm.
a guardian involved. Because a guardian's going to help you do that. A guardian is comfortable with repeatable. They want that. But again, if an organization doesn't have that, it's just chaotic. You mm-hmm. don't know what you're going to get each
There's
time.
There's no breaks.
Right.
So, I see
guardians
as the breaks.
Incredible. Stewarding, responsibility. Guardians are your ones that
so
are
So they want
huge
safety the most?
It's not safety as much. They just don't see the value in making unnecessary risks.
Okay.
Okay, so don't think like it's they're
okay.
willing to do it if the rationale if the if
sense.
The data drives it and says that, yes. But data is king. Truth is king. Black and white is king, right? We agreed to this, we need to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So again, guardians are so incredibly responsible. Mm-hmm. When you give a guardian a task, they will follow through.
Yeah.
Because they said it, and they will do, and they don't really sign up for things that aren't. But when you're trying to think through something and whether it's worth going this new endeavor that sounds good, they're the ones that help you find. Yeah, it probably wasn't. Well, you probably could have got this at this price, and you probably could have done this.
Yeah.
Because they're just really good at that. They don't make a lot of mistakes
no.
because they are enamored by the new and shiny.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's
I
what
used
guardians.
To avoid guardians because it felt like they took the air out of my creative future thinking tires.
Yeah.
Because they asked me hard questions where I didn't know yet.
Right.
I didn't have the steps. I didn't even really have the logic yet, but I had an idea that I felt like was correct.
Right.
It was the right thing to do. And guardians felt like they saw only the flaws.
Yes.
So I just stopped avoiding, or I started avoiding guardians. But these days, Katie Marston, who's on our team for Truth Groups, talk about creating a system that is sustainable, repeatable. And she's like, if I die, somebody's going to be able to pick this right up.
And they will.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
They're phenomenal at that. And that you
we
need
them.
We
left her a mess. Like, we handed her a mess, and she made it gloriously reproducible.
If a team does not have a guardian, pretty much they will tap out at a certain level.
Yeah.
Because they are not... Because guardians help you figure out how to be scalable. They help you figure out how to have a repeatable results. They're so valuable. But sometimes they get a bad rap because they do exactly what you said. They ask the tough questions, uh-huh. and it sometimes feels like you're being interrogated by them.
Yeah.
When you're uh-huh. on the other side. So guardians are sometimes hard to hear just because they ask the questions that sometimes we don't want asked.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think, though, because Katie is so... She's like, I'm just here to help. I'm just here to help. You know what I mean?
Right.
It feels like, no, she's actually in our corner.
Right.
And I think her expressing her actual motivation wasn't to take the air. She's like, I want to make this work. So what about this and this? And we were like, okay, Katie, so here it is. Help us. Like, what are we not thinking of?
Yes.
What is ridiculous? What's not for now? And I feel like it took a long time for her to develop her voice, yeah. really.
They get a bad rap. They get a bad rap as the wet blankets, as the, you know, as the auditors.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's what they get. But
hey,
they're really, really, you kind of wish, if you've ever been in that place that I wish I'd have known that before I made that decision, they're the people that and knew that you didn't ask.
Yeah.
So they didn't get a voice.
Yeah.
In fact, so, 30% of the population are... So between nurturers that are 43% and them that are 30%, wow. you have three quarters
That's
of the
a
population,
majority.
Right? And the problem is that oftentimes those, if you add their voice, if you have the bottom three voices, which are the ones that don't get heard as much, that's 82%.
Wow.
82% of teams and sometimes don't feel heard.
Whoa. Okay, that's...
That's,
wow,
that's it.
That's
because the two loudest voices we're going to get, they always get heard.
Yep.
And they're the voices that are around this table.
Yes.
Right? Exactly.
We will be heard.
Exactly, yeah. So the next voice is your connectors. And connectors, you'll always, their voice you always will hear because they have energy. They have charisma. When a connector walks in the room, they're noticed because they bring excitement and energy. And they're the people that are, like nurturers, they're people-focused. But they're people that know how to connect. Think of the word connect with others. They just seem to know everybody. They never seem like they don't feel comfortable in a group. They don't feel awkward. They love talking to new people. They love making contacts. They can keep a lot of those relationships going because oftentimes they're extroverted or they're on the extroverted at least side of things. They don't have to be hugely, but they are the ones who know how to connect with people, know how to passion. When they communicate, they're incredible communicators, but they primarily communicate with passion mm-hmm. and energy, right? So when they believe in something, they sell you on it.
Yeah.
And not, I don't mean that sell you in a manipulative way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is when it's unhealthy, but they're just, they're very motivational. Mm-hmm. You want to be around, they're very motivational. You know a connector because when you have a problem, they'll tell you, hey, I know somebody. You need to talk to them. They seem to know everybody. And they don't have a problem with that, you know? Mm-hmm. They're energized. But connectors are so good at getting new people involved. Getting, like, where creatives come up with the new ideas, connectors figure out who do we need to get mm-hmm. involved to make this happen.
Yeah.
So connectors are a louder voice, but sometimes... Because when they sell an idea, it's their idea, right? They don't separate themselves. They don't separate basically play and work and who they are. They bring it all, and they love to tell stories. Like when they love to tell you their stories, but sometimes they struggle with feedback. Either giving it because that feels like it alienates people. Remember, connecting that it creates more disconnection sometimes when you do that. So giving feedback and actually taking feedback because for them, when an idea, when they brought it, they brought themselves.
That's
they don't
right.
separate themselves,
no,
right?
There's no separation.
Right. And this is your primary voice, right?
Yes. This is absolutely my primary voice.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the most, when we sat here, we didn't say this, but in the first time around, when we did this recording, that friends you won't have heard, because it's lost in the ether.
Yes.
But the first time around, what really, really, really stuck out to me, and I keep thinking about it, is that Andy sees, not conflict, but truth, like truth telling as a threat to the relationship.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And I see truth, I see not telling the truth as a threat to the relationship.
Right. But that's exactly what connectors do.
Yeah.
Connectors.
It's a threat.
Right.
Yes. I'm like, yes, it is.
We're not paired very well then, because.
No, you are paired well because you need them both. But
yeah.
But they're also, they kind of know how to connect with people. They connect with what matters to people. They're very good at understanding what motivates others.
On the positive side.
On the positive side.
On the positive
exactly.
Side.
Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you're right. It endangers that if I kind of have to say the last 10%, if I have to go
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
And so,
I will
and
sleep.
If you tell them, like a connector, when you've rejected their idea, it's you've rejected them. So what a connector does, if they don't feel, they're in a collaboration, if they don't feel that the team is for them, they'll go find another team.
Yep.
Like that, right? Yeah,
because
they will. Because it's all about that. It's all about that element of we're in this together. And when you're in it with them and they're in it with them, yeah. But if you start to reject them and their idea, they will go find another team that does.
For me, the energy and the motivation comes from the connection first. Meaning, I didn't realize, Dave, until you did this Five Voices with us in January, I didn't understand. I used to have a lot of guilt about intrinsic motivation ought to be natural. It ought to be from my relationship with God or my responsibility or my own values. And so I would often feel guilty because I couldn't self-motivate. Then I did the thing with you, this, learning about my connecting voice. And I realized, oh my gosh, I need this first. This connection point is my motivation.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Period. And I was trying to do it from just me.
Yeah.
There's nothing to connect to if it's just me.
Right.
Like or task list.
Or
social media. Yeah.
And so this has been revolutionary for me for real, Dave.
Right, yeah.
Meaning even some teams, I'm like, I need to get coffee first. If Andy and I have a project or need to have a hard conversation, we've got to connect first and then do that. With my kids, we've got to connect and then do the task list, the chores. So this has really showed me this is where my best momentum is going to be felt.
As you said, they create what your voice. This is what I go to naturally. That's what you're talking about.
Yes.
This is what energizes me. Yeah. Yes.
And yeah, I mean, I can't state it enough. I really poo-pooed myself for not getting really excited over a task list and felt like that was a flaw and a character weakness.
Right.
When now it's like, okay.
We were just doing it wrong.
Yeah.
Right.
And to give myself that permission to be like, okay, I'm going to connect and then heck yeah, I'm going to get all that work done, but it's got to go in that order as much as possible.
Right. Yep.
It's been a game changer for me.
Yeah.
How many connectors?
So connectors are 11%.
Okay.
Yeah. 11% of the population. So they're a little bit more than the creatives, but they're not anywhere close to what guardians.
Yeah.
Right. And what you'll find is a guardian is what we call a nemesis voice to a connector.
Yep.
Because a connector has these new ideas because they can pop off new ideas so fast.
Yep.
And they love that stuff. And they bring it to it. And a guardian just kind of asks them all these questions. Yep. And like, why don't you just throw water? They just like suck the life right out of them. Yes.
Yeah.
But they need them. They value them. A mature one starts to value the other.
Yes.
The more mature you are, what you do is you start to value these the other voices.
And
know you need them.
Yeah.
That's kind of where.
That's so true.
Yeah.
For me, a couple of my own warnings that I've learned in this is one, I can oversell something.
Oh yeah.
Like second nature.
Yeah.
So I've learned even to just say that, hey, don't let me oversell this. Let me back up a little bit to just sort of be more baseline instead of, I would have assumed, I did assume for a long time, I'll pitch the vision or the need or the event, get them to say yes because I've oversold it, and they'll just forget about all the things that I've said to oversell.
Right, exactly.
And they'll just love it so much that they don't care anymore.
And that's a challenge. Every voice has certain challenges with it that they that other people struggle on the other side of them. You know, sometimes when I nurture, it's that other people struggle to believe they're competent because they don't, they kind of almost exude this kind of self-doubt. And so therefore other people go, well, maybe they don't know what they're doing. Like whatever. Creatives, like I say, on the other side have to, they struggle with sometimes pulling back or being feeling like it's negative because it, like I say, we talked about the wet blankets. Guardians sometimes, they struggle with people to think, they believe they're competent, they're not sure they care because they're almost kind of feel like black and white sometimes, right? That there's so much about going after the truth. And connectors sometimes feel like you're being manipulated by a connector. Connectors, is it really about them or is it about me? Do they kind of come across as, you know, that they have that salesman type of label that gets thrown on them really quick.
You should be a salesperson.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because when you sell it, you bring it. Right,
and
which is
I
great.
Believe it 100%. I won't sell something that I am not fully confident you should have.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
Okay,
whether we
guys.
Need it or not. Yes. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Pioneers.
Pioneers. Pioneers are the loudest of the voice. Almost overbearing in their volume sometimes because they dwarf out the other voices or they silence the other voices. A pioneer are tremendous when it comes to achieving, building, accomplishing. They're very strategic in their thing. They love problem solving. They're almost militaristic in the way they have a ability to organize and deploy and execute. For a pioneer, achieving is the most important thing. They love winning. They love making things happen. They love building something significant. Their mind is always about building something in the future, about making this out, about this new endeavor, whatever. But pioneers are often, they can often be incredibly assertive. And so what they do is they drown out the other voices. They often think they're right in a place. But pioneers are where creatives come up with the ideas. Pioneers are the ones that make the ideas happen, bring them into reality, right? But the problem is the pioneers, sometimes they drown out the other voices because a pioneer, they're the first to speak in a meeting and they're the last to speak in a meeting. They often feel they're right. Their ideas, the meetings would happen faster if people would just agree with their ideas because they've thought about it. Because they are. But pioneers, you can often feel manipulated by a pioneer, feel like just a resource in a pioneer to them. So pioneers have their own side, but pioneers are... they have the ability to bring into reality the great ideas. You know, when you think about often entrepreneurs, often the frontline leaders, but they can often be overbearing and bossy too. You know, that's the other side.
Would you say this is like how we, at least in our culture, see the typical leader?
Yes, yes, it
would
be.
This would be the
classic CEO, president, whatever. What's got really interesting, and we saw it last week, is how much your second voice influences your first voice.
Interesting.
That was really interesting because Jeremy and I are both pioneers as our first voice. But Jeremy, I'm a pioneer creative. He's a pioneer connector.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that second voice influences the first voice so much. I'm much more analytical. He's much more relational. He's much more energized like that. He's going to tell a lot more stories. I'm going to go for a lot more system, step by step. Yeah. You can tell it in our teaching. You can tell it in the way we approach things. I'm much more introverted. Yeah. He's much more extroverted. Yeah. But your second voice, and that's what I didn't see, how much your second voice influences your first voice. That's why understanding the voice order, not just your first voice, you can't stop there. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a creative pioneer, right, Melissa? And so... you love the new, that the new idea, but then you want to build the new idea.
I do want to build it,
Right? For me, I love building first. I just don't want to build the same thing twice.
Interesting.
Right? So I learned that because I struggled. Am I a creative pioneer or pioneer creative? Well, I'm way more accomplishing it matters way more than the new idea. Does that make sense?
That is
for
so
me,
true for you.
And for you, the new ideal matters
It does matter a little bit, second to
yes. the building of it.
The conception.
Right.
Fuels me.
Yeah, and see, the conception after a while, I just need to make it happen.
You need more tangible.
I need to see it happen. So what you understand is your second voice so influences. That's why the voice order. Your first voice is one you're unconsciously competent. Your second voice is you're consciously competent, meaning you know how to access it pretty mm-hmm. easily. Some people have those voices pretty close together. Some people are real dominant in their first voice, mm-hmm. but a lot of times they're close together. Your third voice, you're strategically, you're consciously competent, but you pull it out when you need it.
Okay. So like, what's your third voice?
My third voice is a guardian.
Okay, sure.
Right? So I can drill down, I can do the hard questions, but that's my third voice.
Yeah.
And my fourth voice is a connector. That's the one, your fourth voice is what you're unconsciously incompetent, meaning you think you're better at than you are.
That's so
funny. Right? Your last voice, your fifth voice, you know you're not good at that. That nurturer is my last voice. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm not good at that. I know encouraging, I know that's a place I struggle. Because a pioneer encourages, but only if he thinks you deserved it, right?
That's right.
You'll have a voice in a pioneer's world if he believes or she believes you're competent.
Yeah.
She believes you know what you're talking about. Then she'll act, or you're useful. Remember, because mm-hmm. it's about getting the task done. Yeah. So are you necessary in this thing?
So, Melissa, your first voice is creative pioneer.
Guardian.
And then, really, that's your third mm-hmm. is guardian?
What would you think it would be? Nurturer?
It wouldn't be nurturer.
No, not nurturer.
And it wouldn't be connector.
Okay. By default, that makes sense.
I can pull out the hard questions, just like Dave. I can be the skeptic. I can be process. I mean, on Double Tap Media, I worked only in process. It drains me.
It's not a place you want to stay long.
Oh, it drains me. But I can do it.
Your first voice is energizing.
Yes.
In fact, you want 70% of your time, if you can, in those first two voices. If you can pick 70% of your time in those first two voices, you will be much more energized.
Yeah.
Not 100% of your time, because you still need growth and you still need to continue, but that's where you're going to make your most impact. And you're going to feel like you can run farther that way. Mm-hmm. You can run longer that way.
Yeah.
What's yours?
My third.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. So I'm connector, creative, not nurture, not...
You're a pioneer, right? Your pioneer would be your third voice because you still want to accomplish and build.
And I want to build it.
Right.
I want to see the construction. And for me, I kind of wish that connector wasn't in there because I jive strongly off of the creative and the pioneering.
Right.
Like, that's what my heart wants. It's just further down my list.
But your connector is the thing at the top.
It is.
Yes, that's why I say when you can stay in those two. So your second and third voices are probably a little closer.
And I think my building happens through my primary voice of connecting.
Yes, 100%.
Like the building is getting
building the people. Yeah, right.
It's building the people, but not the thing. And I think when you try to build the thing, it gets confusing. And sometimes it feels like you don't want to drop. Yeah, yeah. Where I'm like, just build the people.
What's interesting with Jeremy and I. He doesn't like the details. He gets really, if you spend too much time in the details,
he loses them
real quick. Like, but I can stay in the details for a while.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, super good. Okay. We're going to go into a little bit more on the next episode. So friends, hope this was helpful. Dave, if somebody stopped listening at this point, what would you want to tell them?
I would tell them to go kind of take the test and I'll put the link in there. It's giant.tv/ascend. It's a free test. And then hopefully we'll give some directions about once they've done that. Uh-huh. There is a voice order kind of deep dive with all these micro learnings. Uh-huh. And that's, I remember somebody that took it last week, that got into that, and they said, they stayed up most of the night, like, because they're like, it was scary that this person knows me this well, but I'm learning myself because I feel like somebody gets me. Yeah. So
super empowering, super important stuff. Okay. Thank you, Dave.
Yep.
So good.
Glad to be here.